Midwest Pete with Tom Lounges is made possible by Merrillville's Broadway Glass and Customs, providing auto, commercial, and residential glass replacement for more than 15 years. 219-88-GLASS or BroadwayGlass.net. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges, your host. As you know, this show is all about music and the people who make it. Today, we're going to reflect back on the genius of Prince, the legacy of Prince, and Prince the man. I had the good fortune of meeting him and interviewing him back in 1980. In fact, in 1980, when I went back to meet him, this song was on the charts. Town. Classic Prince going back to about late 79, 1980. Some Tom Lounges, I had the good fortune of meeting and interviewing Prince when that song was just hitting the charts. I wrote on him many, many times. In fact, the opening quote of my National Magazine article for Video Rock Stars back in, this had to be about 1982, was it seems silly to talk about the hows and whys of something you do when you can just go ahead and do it and let the music or whatever your art is speak for itself. And that's why I felt it was important to open with a song from Prince and let the music do the talking and speak for itself. One of my favorite quotes during our interview together was, when I'm angry, I like to turn my guitar up louder. That's a sensibility that brought a lot of rock and roll along with his funk and his pop elements. Prince was one of those artists that just crossed every barrier. He was Prince. He was one of a kind. Uptown was the place I saw him. Those of you that are old school may remember the Uptown Theater, and he was on the Dirty Mind Tour in 1980. Tina Marie was his opening act, and I was working for a magazine out of Cal City, Hegwisch Records, called Night Rock News, and we had just started a disco/R&B dance section in the magazine, and Prince was one of the first artists that we decided to cover. And at that point, he was strictly an urban artist. He had not crossed over yet. And I was always very proud and very thrilled that in the first Prince biography, the hardbound book, it didn't credit me personally, but it did credit two of my articles in Prairie Sun, which I wrote for in Peoria in the Quad Cities, and also Night Rock News. It said, these two publications were the first of the white press to recognize the genius of Prince. Well, we're talking about the genius of Prince, the music of Prince, the influence of Prince, and there is someone on the phone with us right now. He himself is a lifelong musician. He's a funky bass player, the funkiest guy I know. Please welcome the band leader of the Funky Mojo Daddies, Kenny Kenzie.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Hi, Kenny. You are one of the funkiest guys I know when you slap that bass, and I've got to think that Prince was a big influence, a big inspiration in many ways to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, my early 20s was doing the 80s, and just listening to your opening song there, I was just like, man, I used to just jam to that. I mean, it's just funk, and those early records, Controversy and stuff, and musically, even my older brothers, we was all influenced by Prince, and just that whole Minneapolis sound that he just kind of like created, and everybody just kind of followed that. Mm-hmm. That sound that he just cultivated up there.
He was like a Pied Piper. I mean, he got Andre Simone, he got Sheila E., Vanity, Apollonia, all these different cats that just followed him and had their own little stake in fame because of the Minneapolis sound. I don't think there was any single artist, maybe Elvis in Memphis, that really triggered that kind of sound expansion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I remember the first time that, maybe the only time that he came to Gary, he played at the Gary Genesis Center, and me and my brother Donald went down there and attended the show. We were just out in the audience, and the first time I've ever seen, probably the only time that the Genesis Center has been packed to the rafters, and I think it was during the 1999 album he was supporting that, and it was he had the girl band Vanity and The Time, and then he came out, and like talking about the whole Minneapolis thing though, and I think his band, because they had a curtain. And the girls was out front. They had a curtain. We all speculated that, okay, it was some of his band and The Time and probably himself playing behind the girls. And then The Time came out. But it was just, he was just the lead of that whole scene. And then, of course, everybody just, you know, from Janet Jackson to everybody just kind of like wanted to get a piece of that whole thing that was coming out of Minneapolis there for so many years. And it just influenced everybody around the world, I believe. One of the first dates that me and my wife went on was to go see the movie Purple Rain. That was what came out 85, 86.
Yeah, right around there.
And so, you know, I mean, not on the musical level, but just on the personal, emotional level and stuff. I mean, it's just those kind of memories in your lifetime that you remember, you know, first dates was going to see Purple Rain and stuff like that, man. So it kind of really hits home with me and Ken's report, actually, we had the honor of recording one of his songs. I'll tell you a little short story on that one.
Sure.
I think in 93, we was on Virgin Records during that time, and we shared the same management with Albert Collins, and we both had a publishing deal with Warner Chappell Music during that time. And they presented some songs for Albert Collins, and I don't know if he ever recorded anything, but one of the songs was a Prince song, and it's called Five Women. And the management, after Albert, you know, it wasn't really him, and they brought it over to us. And as soon as we heard that particular song, we said, we want to do it, man. And it was, we recorded it on the Crossing Bridges record, came out in 93, called Five Women.
Into five women to get you off of my mind. It took 5 months of plenty good wasted time, but it just took 5 minutes when I saw your face again. Fall in love all over, I guess with you I'll never win.
We still play that song today, man. So, you know, we had that, you know, we didn't ever really meet him personally, but we had that musical connection. And I'm sure in the upcoming months we're going to get back to playing that particular track.
It's funny because his outreach, not only as a performer, as a guitar player, but as a songwriter, touched so many different styles. Of course, nothing compares to you, Sinead O'Connor.
Oh, yeah.
Cyndi Lauper, When You Were Mine. A far distance, you know, spectrum there. Bangles, Manic Monday. Sheena Easton, Sugar yep. Walls. It's like he just wrote and wrote and wrote, was so prolific. And no matter who touched his songs, they seemed to work. Warren Zevon, I think it was, he did Raspberry Beret. His music was able to be interpreted so well by so many others. So I think that's the substance of a great song, when you can take it to all these different styles and different artists, and it always sounds good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just – and being, you know, he could jump on stage with anyone and jam and stuff. You know, it was just that kind of energy and musicianship that he could just play with anybody, and I think it almost felt like you could play with him. You know, he was just on that open musically level,
mm-hmm.
to where you could just, you know, you just felt it. You felt like you was in the nightclub and just jamming. I'm still kind of, when not looking at it and talking about it, I just feel like still deep emotion on it, but. You know, you have to look at, you know, these things happen, and you have to get past and celebrate life. And, of course, his music is going to live on, you know, forever. And we'll be celebrating his music, you know, from now on.
Right. Well, Dirty Mind came out in 1980. Like I said, I was privileged to have met him backstage at the Uptown. Unfortunately, Prince was a pretty quirky fellow. He didn't allow any cameras backstage,
right.
But he did. I've got it actually with me here in the studio. I've got my autographed Prince Dirty Mind backstage pass, along with one of my articles that I wrote, and now one of my most treasured possessions, along with my B.B. King signatures and things like that. These greats that have somehow touched us in our lives, even just a moment or two, and then moved on, and we take a little bit of that greatness with us, I think.
I wish I had some of those moments like that, man, but I will forever hold on. Like I said, we had the honor of recording one of his songs, and you know, I think that one record, Controversy, you know, kind of, you know, he says, I'm not black or white, I'm not straight or gay. You know, that's kind of like where he was, but he was everything in between all of that and more and stuff, you know.
Right.
And I think that was the appeal, and just this whole, you know, his dress, and he was like, you know, he had that thing going on, but he was almost, you know, he had that swag and almost like a pimp almost and stuff. You know, he put on his hat and he was strutting pimp across the stage and stuff. I was like, this dude is gangster and stuff. You know?
You know, when I saw him, like I said, it was on the Dirty Mind tour. And if you remember, I think that was his second or third album.
Yeah.
During that time, he wore pretty much just, you know, briefs on stage and a jacket. Even the cover of the album was like that. And when he came out on stage, I was one of a handful of white people in the audience at that time. He had not crossed over. And it's like I was so thrown into this culture shock. It was so amazing, the adrenaline rush. And here comes this little tiny guy dancing on stage in just his underwear. And I'm thinking, this is very awkward.
Exactly. That was the weird part about it, you know. You kind of got past all that. The music and this whole visual thing is like, wow, you know, there's something going on here and stuff. And
it didn't take long for the rest of the world to catch on. Of course, Prince crossed over right after Controversy. Yeah. That was almost a bridge album in many ways. Still more urban, more funk, but I think after that with 1999 and things, he certainly did hit every culture and every race. Kenny, thank you so much for sharing time with us today.
Well, thanks, Tom, for calling me and asking me to share some thoughts.
All right, Kenny, we're going to play this one as we say goodbye. This is from 1981. It's a song that you said you love. It's Controversy. Controversy, Prince, the Tom Lounges, as I reflect on my personal encounter with Prince, and we've got some special guests joining us. We have another one coming up in just a moment. It was a very cold December night in 1980. backstage at Chicago's Uptown Theater. Just minutes after Prince left the stage, throngs of screaming fans were yelling and dancing. It was pandemonium. It was something special to be there, to see Prince right before he broke huge. He was still very much an urban artist. He hadn't crossed over. And despite being exhausted from his hour-plus performance that I had just seen, we went backstage at the Uptown Theater, and the Minneapolis Future Superstar was a very gracious host. As I mentioned on the other side of that song, he wouldn't allow us to take pictures, but he was happy to sign things for us, and he signed my backstage pass. And it's funny because I actually not only got to go back and interview Prince, but for about 8 minutes, I worked security for Prince's dressing room door. It's a funny story. I guess there was an incident at the front gates of the Uptown Theater, and I knew some of the security guys from having been in a journalism business, and they knew that I had also worked nightclub security at one time. So this friend of mine that I knew said, hey, you know, we've got a radio call or something. I have to run downstairs. Can you do me a big favor? Just stand in front of this dressing room door and make sure nobody goes in. Nobody bothers. Nobody knocks. Nobody does anything. And I said, sure. So he slapped on my security pass, which I've got right here in front of me. It's a Green Jam Productions Tina Marie Prince security pass, as well as my backstage Prince Dirty Mind pass. And it was just a great memory. Of course, there was no incidents at all. I never had to do anything except stand there like a sentry. And soon my friend came back, and I found out it was Prince's backstage door, his personal dressing room that I had been standing in front of, because a few minutes later I was invited in to do the interview. And it was a very interesting evening. It was very cold, as Chicago winters often are, in that December night, and he had one of those huge turbo space heaters going. So it was very loud. It was like a jet engine only about 10 feet away. And Prince, of course, was very soft-spoken. And the tape that I had of this interview was very difficult to decipher. So maybe one day, if I can find that tape, it's among the many boxes of things I've got in storage, I may be able to clean it up a little bit and use it on a show. But it was interesting. I do remember him serving fruit and vegetables and all this healthy stuff. There was no alcohol allowed backstage. He did offer us, I think it was fruit punch or some kind of punch. Shook hands. It was very cordial. Sat down, gave us as much time as we needed. And as I mentioned, from that interview, I wound up writing several national articles for, Night Rock News and Prairie Sun were regionals. I wrote for Song Hits, Word Up magazine, with one of the first national rap magazines and hip-hop magazines I did a Prince piece for, and, of course, Video Rock Stars, which is the one I have with me today. And it's interesting because we've all seen Purple Rain, and we know the story of the family life that he had. And one of the quotes, and then we'll get to another song and our guest, is we talked about his upbringing. And this is a quote from the article I wrote back in the 80s. It says, my father left my family, when I was about 7 years old. Before that, I was never allowed to play the piano because all I really did was bang on it anyway, and it really irritated him. Well, his father may not have encouraged the boy's musical pursuits. His mother certainly did. And Prince went on to say that when my father left us, I was allowed to practice any time I wanted, and I really began to love piano very, very, very much. In fact, the love didn't stop there. I loved music so much I wanted to grow and began playing guitar and other instruments. I've always believed that a person should try to always continue learning new things and continue growing. This is especially true for musicians. I think because when you stop striving forward, you get content, and then you get stagnant, and you go nowhere. Well, we certainly know that Prince never stopped learning, never stopped growing, and his pursuit, his journey carried on for many, many albums and many different styles and phases. And we're going to give you kind of a short medley here of probably his most productive and famous period. And on the other side, a very special guest will join us.
Keep busting. Dig, if you will, the picture of you and I engaged in a kiss. You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on.
Maybe we can end the goodies. Maybe we can make some time.
You're so creepy. make it cry.
Beloved, we are gathered here today to celebrate the life of the late, great Prince Nelson, a.k.a. Prince. That's kind of a medley of his peak years, I guess, the Purple Rain era. We've got with us a guy that has a lot of experience when it comes to arranging and songwriting and being a little bit left of center himself. Prince, of course, was kind of an enigma. As Kenny Kenzie said, I'm not black, I'm not white, I'm not straight, I'm not gay. Prince was just the embodiment of music. And in many ways, it reminded me of my good friend Jim Scafish from East Chicago. Different style of music, perhaps, or maybe not, because Prince straddled those borderlines, those boundaries, in many ways like Jim has. And Jim is a lot of times my go-to guy when we talk about different artists because he is so, well, fluent in so many different areas. And Jim, are you with us?
I am with you, and thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I want to talk specifically with you about Prince and his songwriting and his arranging and his production skills. We talked a few minutes ago with Kenny Kenzie about the urban sound, the funk sounds. We had talked how Prince's music was so universal that the Bangles could do it.
It's just another manic Monday.
Warren Zevon could do it. Sheena Easton could do it. I mean, everybody, Cyndi Lauper. They all were able to take a Prince song and take it to the top of the charts and make it sound as if it were their own. And it didn't sound, you know, so many songwriters, sound, you can tell it's their song by the way it's structured.
Away.
And with Prince, you couldn't. I mean, there were certain times you could, but a lot of his stuff was so different. What's your take on him?
Well, first off, Scafish bassist Lee Gatlin had been in a band with Prince in the 70s, and I could see with Lee Gatlin's versatility, I saw that connection to Prince's versatility very early on, even before Prince had become the global phenomenon that he'd become. But here's the thing to think of. Okay, as an artist, Prince was certainly a musical genius, and he was what we would call a natural musician. He could slide in and out of things. He could slide into rock and funk and soul and, you know, jazz and even, you know, dance music, everything. But what it was is that I think that his talent combined with his spirituality and his understanding of the universal consciousness is what made him so vital as a songwriter and arranger. Because you know in the music business, people will say, oh, that won't fit in that radio format, or, you know, this audience won't like that, and they try and categorize and keep you in these nice little generic boxes. But Prince had nothing to do with that. So in other words, he could slide from rock, or what we could call white music, to black music, to urban music, to more classic music, mm-hmm. and because he was not limited in consciousness. So there was two factors here. There was his tremendous musical talent, which was obvious, and his natural ability. You could hear when he would play something, there was a fluidity, there was a naturalness to his singing, and also with the idea of consciousness being universal. So what he would do is blend things in eclectic ways, blend things, you know, similar in a sense to David Bowie, mm-hmm. and be able to just jump galaxies and genres, and I think that's what made him so outstanding. And he was gutsy. He was gutsy. And so many artists today are not gutsy, and he was gutsy on a multitude of levels, and I think it really paid off for him, not just commercially, but artistically, and certainly his impact will be, you know, indefinite.
Well, he played guitar in many ways like Hendrix. He could play like Santana. His vocals and his presence went the gamut from James Brown and Sly Stone style to Little Richard. I mean, he was an amalgamation of so many generations of performers. Do you think that, again, you said it didn't fit into anything. Why do you think he was one of those few artists that can defy the genres and the categorization and made it so huge by doing it his way?
Well, I think it's one of these magical things where certain people have a mixture of having their pulse on the finger on the pulse of consciousness. It's spiritually brought through, but they're in tune to a cosmic energy of what is going to resonate with the public. And certain people are very forward-thinking with it, and other people are just kind of going along with the pack. I think Prince had a mixture of gifts, musical genius and talent, spiritual consciousness and awareness, and somehow he had his pulse on the ability to connect with people, and people who would be, you know, average people in the audience, not necessarily unique artists per se only. It's not like he just had a little niche audience that gave him a small little cult following. So I think it was a combination of all of those things, because if you think of it, when people step outside of the norm, it will always be opposed. It is very seldom that people will say, hey, you're doing something different, let's support it. So you have to have these huge, pardon the word, balls to be able to really break down those barriers. And I think Prince was audacious, he was gutsy, he was willing to do it, and he had the talent and the vision to back it up.
We saw so many, I don't want to say wannabes, but fringe acts that spun off of the Prince universe. Andre Simone, Morris Day and the Time, Vanity, Apollonia, all these different characters that were part of his group or entourage at one time that had one or two albums, maybe a hit or two, but didn't have the sustenance that Prince had. Do you think that's because it was, I don't want to say a watered-down version, but kind of a pale imitation of the master?
Well, I think that, you know, that there's something that was said to me decades ago, and I remember it, and it stuck with me, that the bulk of all art in any given period is mediocre, not necessarily horrible or outstanding. So the bulk of it is going to be mediocre. So very seldom do we have an artist who is so genre-breaking and historically defining as a Prince. And so, of course, it's going to spawn imitators. The Beatles spawned imitators. The Rolling Stones spawned imitators. David Bowie spawned imitators. And so what happened is that artists who were perhaps less in talent, less in vision, less in integrity, perhaps, were able to, you know, do some imitative things of him, but they didn't compare. You know, there's only one original when you have somebody who really creates so much. And again, somebody with his level of impact is rare, which is what makes him so outstanding. But of course, the people who imitated him were going to be, you know, imitations.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a member of the early Skafish band had played with Prince. Was that perchance in his group Champagne?
You know, I don't remember the name of the group, but it was in the mid-70s, and Lee Gatlin, my bassist from the Conversation album and the European tour, was a Minnesota native, and he had played with Prince, and then he came and worked with me. Also, I don't know if you knew this, but Cat Glover, who danced for Prince on the Sign of the Times tour, was first in my video, Wild Night Tonight. She also performed with me when I co-headlined a show with porn star Steka.
Oh, I did not know that.
So yeah, Cat Glover was with me back in 1983.
Okay.
And Cat went on to go with Prince, of course, and was an outstanding dancer. She appeared on the set of our Wild Night Tonight video, and she just tore it up. It was amazing.
I remember him telling me in that 1980 interview that his first real band was called Champagne. It was based out of Minneapolis, of course, and he was in his late teens. He said they did about a dozen original songs he had written, his early stuff, along with some top 40 covers. And he said that's when he realized that doing other people's music just isn't what made him happy. And I remember him telling me at that point, I try to never listen to commercial radio or radio at all because I don't want to be influenced by what someone else is doing. I want the music to come through me from the universe, which I thought was a very esoteric, bizarre statement. Years later, looking back, it makes a lot more sense of what he said. But he said he didn't listen to radio. He didn't have outside influences whenever possible so that it wouldn't corrupt the flow of the stream of his creativity, I guess.
Well, it's an interesting point. As a spiritual and metaphysical master and teacher myself, that I understand where he was coming from spiritually quite well. I recently heard an interview with him where he made a comment that he is traveling through this world but not of it. And I thought that really summed up him in a spiritual level, because there was an otherworldly presence about Prince. There was something outside of this dimension about him, as I feel that there is with a lot of great artists. And so if we look that all art comes from source, infinite intelligence, universal consciousness, that's where it all comes from. You know, and it comes from there and then trickles down through the ether into human consciousness and, of course, is brought into physical manifestation. And I think what Prince was saying back then was the idea that he was trying to be connected in oneness to source, to not get distracted by radio or promotional people or genres or limits or all of that BS that it's so horrible to deal with as an artist, right? And I think that what he wanted to do was sidestep that and transcend it and be connected to infinite intelligence. And I think that he did a very good job of doing that, because you could hear that his music was different in many of the time periods that it was created. And of course, when we look back at it in retrospect, it's now a part of our cultural collective. We're going to see it as, oh yeah, that was cool, but it was revolutionary at its time, in the same way that Little Richard was revolutionary in his time, or Miles Davis was. But once it becomes normed, you know, it becomes a normed thing in culture, that it becomes accepted. But we have to never lose sight of the fact of how revolutionary a lot of his ideas were.
Mm-hmm. Well, he made rock music that you could dance to, and dance music that rocked. I think he bridged the two cultures, because it was always, he came along at a time right after the whole disco demolition, if you remember. And the disco was so synthesized, and it was just not real music in many ways. Then Prince comes along and shows that you can dance and still be a real musician and still rock out. He kind of blended all the styles of that era into one conglomeration that was just the Minneapolis sound.
He really did, and not comparing them to Sly Stone, but I think Sly Stone did some of that as well, in that sort of blending of these different genres. But I think Prince also went beyond that, too, because there were certain things he did that were quite experimental, not necessarily just this ability to blend black and white culture or black and white music. He did that very well, but there was always different threads that were coming in and out, and you could hear unusual jazz threads coming out, which was reminiscent to me of kind of a Miles Davis sort of an inspiration. And then you can also hear where he would go kind of experimental in a way that was sort of hard to classify, you know, that the music could be ethereal and kind of odd and kind of out there. And I think that Prince, you know, mastered so many genres and put them together in his own unique way. And that's a really hard thing to do in the music industry, because the music industry wants to categorize people and make them sheep and make them generic. So if you're the rock guy, then you've got to stay rock. You know, just like when Motley Crue had said they'd lose their audience if they thought they drank milk. You know, that in other words, you develop this image and this branding and these musical limits, and that the record companies and the media will want you to stay within them, and then a few artists have the guts to stay outside of those and still amazingly make them sell records. I mean, Prince has sold over 100 million records, so this is not a guy who's culty or a guy who's underground. This is a guy who changed culture forever.
Well, he, and something that you have a lot in common with Prince is the shock value. When, like I said, when I first saw him, I was one of a handful of white folks that was in this audience at the Uptown Theater. He had far from crossover yet, very urban. And he came out, this little tiny guy, dancing pretty much in his underwear. It was like briefs and a little sport coat. And I know that you yourself have shocked many times early on. You came out wearing dresses and things. But you went on and lost a lot of that and grew into your persona, as did Prince. So the shock value might have got our attention, but it was the music that kept us. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I certainly would agree with it. And I mean, here's the thing, that I would not speak for Prince, but I would think that for him, that they weren't separate. And for me, they weren't separate. In other words, what I expressed in sexuality and visual and music and art, it was all one. It was all me. It wasn't like, well, we're going to have something to shock people to get attention. I mean, I was shot at. So I'm saying it was not a pleasant thing being rioted and having people trying to literally kill me. Okay. And so I'm saying with Prince, I think it was the idea that that sense of oneness was there. But again, when you're different, and you're really different, you can't help but to be that. And then when you want to put it out there for the world, you're on fire, and you're going to do it life or death. And in the same way that I felt that life or death conviction, and still do, I believe that it was apparent that he did as well. Because keep in mind, he could have played it safe a million times. He could have toned it down a million times, and he did not. But what the amazing thing was is that he didn't tone it down, but it still worked.
Right. Well, the whole era of changing his name to a symbol and not staying with 1999, which was a cash cow, and moving on to some very bizarre things that he did later musically. So he was always on that adventure, that journey.
Well, one of the things, too, that he had spoke of changing his name to the symbol, and this would speak to the androgyny that I think that was a very important part of what he brought to the table, is that he was saying the symbol was supposed to be a representation of male and female. So even though Prince had kind of an urban macho thing happening, as demonstrated in the Super Bowl performance when he used his guitar as a phallic symbol, there was also a very feminine side to him, too, where he would wear makeup and he would wear girls' clothes. So it was that mixture that was very exciting. And I would also note that I think in today's world, there is such a shortage of male performers who are popular, who represent unique sexuality, gender bending, and androgyny. And I think part of that is with the dominant rise of hip-hop music, which is primarily homophobic. But with somebody like Prince, that sense of that genre-breaking, gender-bending thing was very much a part of him. And I would say that that was very much a part of his essence, because doing those kind of things is never easy. In other words, going on stage and, you know, having people call you a fag or making fun of you or wanting to hurt you, you know, those are not easy things to do, and they take a lot of guts, and he certainly had those guts.
All right. Jim Scafish, thank you so much for joining us in Remembering Prince.
Oh, it's wonderful hearing from you. Take care, Tom. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to get back to a Prince favorite of mine. This one was a pretty big hit for him. It kind of sums up what Jim was saying about his ability to cross over and affect things. It's about Prince, and it's about living that pop life.
Life. Everybody can't be on top. Life.
living that pop life. Prince, who we lost at the age of 57. I want to thank my guest, Kenny Kenzie of the Funky Mojo Daddies, giving us his perspective. He was very influenced by Prince, as you might expect, being in a band called the Funky Mojo Daddies. If you like to dance, you love good dance, funky music, they are certainly a band to see. We also want to thank Jim Scafish, a good friend of mine, a source in many ways for musical topics. Jim is well-versed. He has been around the world, literally, many times, and has explored a lot of different styles of music. And I think we should just leave it there and say thank you, Prince, for all the wonderful music. Thank you, Prince, for the great memory you gave me when I had a chance to interview you in 1980 on the Dirty Mind Tour. It helped out a lot at a time I needed it. So, Prince, thank you so much for everything you did. We're going to leave you with a little trip to Alphabet Street featuring Sheila E.
No!
On percussion.
I'm going down. Alphabet Street, I'm gonna crawl. First girl that I meet, I'm gonna talk so sexy. She want me from my head to my feet. Gonna drive my daddy's Thunderbird. White, red, white. 66, so glam. It's absurd. I'm gonna put her in the backseat and drive her to Tennessee.
Shut it right.
No!
Cat.
Midwest Beat with Tom Lounges is made possible by Merivale's Broadway Glass and Customs, with banner printing and truck wrapping services to promote your business. More info at 219-88-GLASS or broadwayglass.net.